Europe's strongest conventional army, that is the goal that this German government has set. But why now? Well, we'll get to that. And first, let's talk basics. So an army needs tanks, planes, ships, drones, increasingly, sure, but none of that matters without people to operate them. And that is why Germany is now seriously debating the return of mandatory military service in one form or another. So when could that start? Who would it affect? And will women be included? And crucially, are Germans even on board with this? To unpack all of that, I've got a great lineup today on Berlin Briefing. Michaela is here, along with Sina Schweigler from Süddeutsche Zeitung, who also covers defence and security. And joining us remotely is someone who knows the Bundeswehr inside out, is a social media influencer, a content creator, and a captain for the Bundeswehr. So, David Mattei, great to have you with us over there on the line. Let's start with you, David. What exactly is your job?
So, right now in the military, I'm a youth information officer. So, this is what I do when I'm on duty, where I help the public to understand security policies, especially young adults and the youth. And then on the other hand, I'm online, as you mentioned, on social media as a content creator, explaining the same issues, the same topics, also to a young audience. And right now, of course, I'm off duty, not speaking for the German Armed Forces, but happy to be here with you.
That is great. And that is also part of the current Zeitenwende, that turning point, of course, that now the Bundeswehr has people who are active on social media because, of course, they need to reinvent their image as well. They do want to attract a lot of more people. Michaela, if you could just set the scene, why are we talking about that idea of reintroducing some form of mandatory military service here?
Well, because essentially the German army needs people above all. And there's about 180,000 active service women and men, mainly men, of course. And Germany in the future predicts that it will need more to the tune of upward of 370,000. And they won't be able to attract so many people, particularly because skilled labor is much sought after in Germany, but also because historically being in the army just wasn't cool. It's a post-World War society, and actually my dad was in the army, and it really wasn't cool if your dad was serving, although he was a helicopter pilot. So this is also an image problem that the German army has to work against in a very crucial time, as that immediate threat to NATO, the need to defend the country, has actually been declared as something as a bit of news by the German defense minister, who said that Germany needs to become service war ready within the next couple of years, particularly against the threat of Russia.
And David, is it cool now to be a member of the army?
I wouldn't call it cool myself. What I experience when I talk with the public, when I talk with my community online, I realize there is a huge interest in what I'm doing. Since the pausing of the conscription back in 2011, there is nobody at the dinner table anymore who can talk about his experience in the military. So anytime I'm in public, or I show myself as a soldier, or I mentioned I'm a military officer, there's like a serious but also honest interest. They want to know more. What exactly are you doing there? Is it true what they're writing in the newspapers all the time? Like, what is the situation? So I realize there's a honest interest in the military.
And Sina, you spoke to David a couple of months ago. If you compare your conversation back then to where we are now, I mean, things are changing so fast at the moment. Can you just give us a bit of an idea?
Yeah, things are changing super fast. Last time David and I spoke, it was still in the beginning, like, the Bundeswehr is doing something on social media. How are they doing it? Why are they doing it? And is it really necessary doing all of these things? And in my experience, I think it's very important that the Bundeswehr is trying to be more attractive, more open-minded, especially to young people. I spoke to my nephew a couple of months ago, also when I spoke to David in December, half a year ago, and he crawled to me in my couch and he said, said, Sina, can we talk to each other? And I said, yes, of course. And he said, I'm so scared. Do I have to go to the military service? Do I need to go there?
How old is your nephew?
He's 14 years old. He turns 15 in December. So it's an actual thing that he needs to think about. And we were having this discussion. And I realized that in school and they're not really talking about that in the classes, but on the breaking sessions, like they're talking, the pupils are talking with each other. So I thought, it's really interesting what David is doing, because I think it's necessary that people like David and the Bundeswehr is going to the schools, advocating like what they're doing, what the military is doing. So they get a better understanding also in what Bundeswehr really means and what the situation is like in Europe. Like you were talking about the how Russia is aggressive and how everything is going on. So I think it's a really necessary job that they're doing at the moment.
And we realise that there's a lot of interest out there as well, not just in Germany, but also abroad. I mean, when we did this episode on Berlin Briefing, you know, are Germans ready to defend Europe? We got a lot of comments from our audience asking specific questions like, when will that start and will women be included? So, Michaela, can you just talk us through the kind of ideas that are being floated now by Boris Pistorius, the German defence minister? What is on the table?
Yes, and this is actually the episode, and it won't be the last one for sure, because we still haven't seen that law really become a final draft version. He's only really presented it to his own parliamentary group so far, and his favourite model would be the so-called Swedish model, which is a mixture of conscription and a voluntary model where everybody above the age of 18 gets a letter, essentially, and amongst those who respond and show active interest, then there would be a pre-selection, and those would be who are seen fit would be offered a potential option within the army. But then it becomes also mandatory to some, because then there is a legal option to really make it mandatory for these young people to join the army for a while. Here in Germany, that's for women and men. Here in Germany, the constitution only allows conscription for men. That would require 2/3 majority to change. That is not really on the cards at this moment in time. But the whole debate about conscription and this actually becoming a career opportunity, it's just, for many people, it's not even on their horizon. That is put also on the political agenda. And now we're seeing a debate within the coalition what the exact shape of this should be.
And what I find interesting in this discussion is that it is, I think, to people abroad especially, unfathomable to see just how we're starting almost from scratch. So, you know, if you can talk to us about that peace dividend, you know, and the perception here in Germany by many that history was over after the end of the Cold War. And so Germany did have a model of conscription, but then they decided to suspend it. But during the phase of the Cold War, the army was actually very, very strong. But then we abolished all structures for a functioning army, thinking, you know, war and conflict is not going to come back to this continent.
Yeah, we were living in a scenery where we thought war is never going to happen, everything will change, we're living in a peaceful area now at the moment. So things are getting, step by step, they build it down, I'm not sure with the English, so we don't have places anymore where people can sleep if they go to the Bundeswehr. We don't have
the barracks,
yes. We don't have people anymore in structures anymore who can help, who can educate the Bundeswehr, the conscripts. So it's a huge thing now to start from totally scratch to like Zeitenwende, to Kriegstüchtigkeit, because we were thinking that we're living in peace forever. Somehow people didn't have it in mind anymore. And it's now a huge exercise also for the politicians to make this change within the German society, because I think that's the biggest thing that they need to do, to change the view of people, to slowly tell them, well, peace is over. Well, it's since 3.5 years now that there's a war in Ukraine, so people might know what's going on.
Actually, some people would say that it started in 2014,
exactly,
right?
Exactly. And some people also
want of Crimea.
Exactly. And some people are also wondering, like, why do we start now from the scratch? We knew 2014 or 3.5 years ago. So why is it from the scratch now? So I think it's also something that you need to have in mind when you're talking about conscription service, mandatory conscription service, that people were thinking that they're living in peace like forever and things changed now. And this mindset is really hard to change. It needs some time also. So that's something that the politicians and the whole society needs to do also.
So, David, you've been with the Bundeswehr for quite some time. Can you notice that this is changing? What is the situation like in the armed forces?
Yeah, it's totally changing. Like when I look back, when I entered the military, that was 2011. We had, that was during the time where we closed barracks, where we sold tanks, where we sent soldiers into pension early on, because the idea back then was like, how can we save money and why do we even need a military? So it was all about former deployments. So we are in Afghanistan, in Mali, Kosovo, building veils and building democracies. That was kind of the vibes the society had about the German armed forces. And for that, we came from a time, as Sina described, with almost 500,000 soldiers down to 165,000 soldiers when I entered the military. And then Crimea happened, and it was kind of like a wake-up call for the first time. And NATO, Europe, Germany realized, oh, wow, we thought defense and defending our country and our allies was a thing of the past, but it appears to be important again back in those days. And that's when Germany started again investing in its military, again, like having the Trendwende personnel, like also starting to bring more people in the military. That's when all the advertisements with the Bundeswehr going on social media, on YouTube, but also those on the train and on the pizza cartons and where you can see all the military patterns. That's when it started, because they realized we need more soldiers again. And that was kind of the kickoff event, 2014, kind of the first wake-up call.
And now we have established the necessity for why politicians are saying that this needs to happen. But just listen to the German Chancellor and, you know, even the tone of his voice just makes it clear that this is a completely new reality that we're in.
The government will in future provide all the necessary funding that the Bundeswehr needs to become Europe's strongest conventional army. A more than appropriate aim for Europe's most populous and economically strongest country. It's what our partners and friends expect. More than that, it's what they demand.
Yeah, but not everybody sees it that way, even here amongst German politicians. Michaela, can you walk us through that debate that is happening between Friedrich Merz's conservatives and the Social Democrats? Boris Pistorius, the German defense minister, most popular politician here in this country, is very much on the same page as Friedrich Merz and is behind this idea of revamping the military, of introducing this law that we've just talked about, you know, reintroducing some form of mandatory military service. But Boris Pistorius is from a party, the SPD, where not everybody is on board.
And the Social Democrats are also still under suspicion of being too Russia-friendly in parts. So you essentially have three different views. You have the Social Democrats, who are very skeptical of conscription as a concept, who tend to, in parts, see the Russian threat as less threatening than actually the mainstream here in Germany. Then you have Boris Pistorius, who was the odd one out in the previous government, who became Germany's most popular politician by having nothing but bad news to the German public and telling them what they did not want to hear, that war is back, that the threat is back, that Germany needs to ramp up its defense capabilities, and that, yes, that could mean conscription. And then you have Friedrich Merz, who pretty much heads on and also in the election campaign made very clear that he's going to be very ambitious, that his interpretation of the new leadership by Germany that he's promised will also mean that Germany has a need, he says, to become the largest conventional army in Europe. Now, conventional because Germany is not a nuclear power and is not allowed to become a nuclear power. And I think, you know, just a tiny detour into the past, when there were some 500,000 soldiers in Germany, that was just after reunification. That's where the East Bloc and the West Bloc, who used to face off, became one Germany, which is a historic miracle anyway. And it's rather unique that two armies needed to be integrated, and it wasn't possible to integrate these two armies. I mean, I do remember that from own personal experience, because my dad was in the West German Army. And that created no longer a need for these armies to face each other geographically. And Germany had a new historic role, clearly highly dependent on the United States. And just bringing in Donald Trump, Germany, Europe is more reluctant to rely on that continuing protection from the US that's created this necessity. And this is the interesting point, because despite being more skeptical of the American role in the world, the Social Democrats seem to see a lot more internal debate over the necessity of being able to defend yourself and to have the capabilities that their own defense minister from the Social Democrats is calling for, and how much that should really get into the living rooms, to the kitchen tables of every single German. That is not their narrative. That is not their historical story. Their story is the struggle of the ordinary worker to have social protection in Germany. So it makes it difficult for them to go to that kitchen table and actually put demands, very personal demands, send us your sons into the military because there might be a war in the future. And they are already, they suffered so badly in the past elections. Their polling is in the small double digits now, the worst historical results. So they don't want to distort that narrative any further. And that's why the Social Democrats are a lot more reluctant to go down that road, but they will eventually. And that's why the exact terms, women, men, mandatory, not the small print would really matter here in Germany for this coalition.
And it's not just the Workers' Party, it's also the party that famously keeps repeating their own story of how they were the only party that voted against Adolf Hitler and stopped or tried to stop him from taking over power here in Germany. So that is a narrative that, you know, that lives on, that gets passed on from generation to generation of SPD politicians, that they are against fascism. And essentially, they also say that they are the party that reminds everybody that you have to use diplomacy to end conflicts, right? And then, Zina, that led to a situation at the SPD party convention where you saw the German defense minister actually having to talk to members of his own party about why it was not possible to negotiate with Vladimir Putin. Let's just listen to Boris Pistorius.
This imperialist in the Kremlin does not want to negotiate. He does not want peace.
Yeah, Boris Pistorius there. He then went into an hour-long conversation with the head of the Young Social Democrats, who was behind this move to make it very, very clear that the Social Democrats would not support mandatory military service. Can you give us the background?
Yes, the young party, the young leaders, they didn't want to have that one. They want to have it all on a voluntarily basis. So because they say the youth in Germany already suffered enough, there was COVID, there's anything else that was on the back of the young people.
Climate change,
yes. Of course. So it's so much that the burden is so heavy on them. So you can't put that also on them. So Boris Pistorius needed to talk with them that the mandatory service is not really an option and that it needs to be done. The mandatory stuff. So they had a discussion and they found out that, okay, so we make it in the draft, like, so it will be voluntary. We want to make the Bundeswehr more attractive. More people will come if we give them a driving license. But Boris Pistorius also managed to put something in this draft, which is saying, like, if the dangers are too high and if we don't get too many people or enough people in a voluntary basis, then we can change this to a mandatory service. So he was following what the young people were saying in the SPD, but he made a slight thing inside this one to follow what they were saying, but
slight
also
caveat.
Slight caveat, yes, and to still go to the mandatory stuff if it's not enough, because you can't say that you want to make the Bundeswehr more attractive, but it doesn't make it more attractive automatically by saying it.
Yeah, exactly. And we can just listen to the head of the Young Social Democrats at that party convention after those hours of talk with Boris Pistorius.
And in the end, I think it's a good sign that we were able to find a compromise on this point. We both had to give quite a bit of ground, but we managed to do it within a few hours. We back a voluntary model. For us as the youth wing of the Social Democratic Party, it's clear. We want to send a strong signal that we trust young people, that we trust them to take on responsibility, and that we do not want to introduce a mechanism that automatically shifts to compulsory service.
Summer is here and vacation is calling. So at the end of July, we're bringing you a special series with our favorite tips for living a greener life. From what to look out for in your sunscreen to how to reduce your dog's environmental paw print, we'll get insights and advice from the experts and have a look at our own habits. Find our Greener Living series from Living Planet wherever you get podcasts.
David, back to you. How useful are members of the armed forces if they're being forced to join the army anyway?
Yeah, that's a good question, since in the 21st century, we have more and more advanced weaponry systems that have a long period of training, and you need to be a professional to master systems like this advanced we have. This is one point. So we always need a huge chunk of the military that is there voluntarily and their whole life as an officer or a soldier in the military. But then again, there are a lot of things to be done in a state of defense. Like if something happens in Germany, you quickly need to be able to ramp up or build up or grow up is the German term we have. So you need a huge portion of people that are able to, I don't know, use a gun, do basic tasks of protecting certain objects like a electricity storage or some other critical infrastructure, so that in a case of defense that you can fastly, quickly grow up all those conscripts you had over the last couple of years to be used as reservists. So this is also an important topic you cannot forget if you talk about conscription. It goes hand in hand with a reservist service. It's also a very important point to make.
Yeah, and I just want to add to that there was not a big ideological reason why military conscription was put on hold. Legally, it was put on hold in 2011. It was essentially also to save money. There was a very pragmatic reason to do this. And the other aspect, as David just mentioned, is reservists. You don't have, like in Finland, for instance, where the soccer mom is also a reservist. You don't have a lot of that, who then knows how to secure her area, or how to who might be an engineer and who can then help out at short notice. So there's no defense reflex in German society. And in the past, there was a conscription service, but you could also do an alternative service, which would have a social,
taking care of older people.
Yeah, exactly. Helping in hospitals. And actually the huge debate when military conscription was dropped or suspended was that those people were needed. They were desperately needed to keep hospitals going, to keep care homes running. So there's a huge, and I think one shouldn't underestimate this aspect of social coherence, of building a reflex, of a capability for a country to pull together. And that is also an argument that particularly Boris Pistorius cites many times over. And that also sees also the Green Party, who, you know, has their emphasis on climate change, of course, but who's been incredibly pragmatic also in facilitating the financing that allows Friedrich Merz to pursue all these policies, the investment and the defense policies. They put a model also on the table, and it really doesn't have much of a chance of getting through because they are in the opposition now, that has much more of an emphasis on this social aspect and bringing the society together.
Is that something that is going to be a part of that new draft law, Zina, the social cohesion aspect of it?
Yes, if you don't want to go to the military service, you can also choose to do the Kriegsdienstverweigerung, and then you can also find those things in this. But also this needs to put up again, because also the system would be also maybe overwhelmed by a lot of people coming now to serve again in the hospital. What I wanted to add is something, is the word resilience, because mm-hmm. I think this is really important, as you can see also in Ukraine, that the people, they are resilient more, because it's hard to say, but they're used to war now, but they also were in the military service, they're also in the social services. It's what they do in the Scandinavian models, like the Swedish model, as you mentioned. So I think this is also something very important as a society, that if something is going to happen, that we're resilient, that we're doing the social stuff, and that we're also capable on defend ourselves.
I want to get to two more things. One specifically, when is all of that going to start? What does it actually mean for people who are born after the 31st of December 2007? And what do Germans say? We've got a poll that sees that German Defence Minister Boris Pistorius has three quarters of the German population behind him that say, yes, we do want to see some form of mandatory military service. So that is a comfortable majority by the population. But of course, what's also clear is that the younger people get, the less likely they are to say, yeah, hey, cool, let's do that. And let me join the army and start my professional career a bit later. So where do Germans stand? Maybe I can throw that to David, because you've got a good idea. You talk to people, you get comments on social media.
Yeah, and it sounds like my own life. Like back in the days, I was just a young adult, 18, still in high school, a classical boys' row in the back of the classroom, and we all received a letter from the military about the draft or the conscription service. And we were all on one side about what we wanted, and we all did not want anyone to tell us what to do after high school. We wanted to decide ourselves what we want to do. So we all found a way to sneak out the mandatory conscription service. And later, when the guys in my row all found their roles in life already, I still had no idea, and I still had the letter on my desk lying there and screaming at me for days. So I took all my bravery together, took my phone in my hand, and called the military. Hey guys, I'd like to try it out. I tried it out for 8 months, and I liked it so much that I signed up for 15 years, almost a half of my life. So that's why I'm a fan of the idea of trying to solve the issue on a voluntary basis first. I also think it's very important for a democracy. If we, I don't know, jump forward in the future and we have a mandatory conscription service in Germany, it is also very healthy for a democracy to be able to say, look, we tried it on a voluntary basis. We tried to make it more attractive and to give you a choice. You know, there are two hearts beating in my chest, the heart of a father. I don't want my daughter to grow up in Germany where she has to go to the military even if she doesn't want to. But then at the same time, there is a heart beating in my chest as a person who spent half of his life in the military and seeing the threat that is put upon us, for example, 2029 and the date that is put there out in the room from all NATO allies, then I think, okay, there.
Hang on, we just need to explain what that means. The date 2029 is when most military experts in NATO seem to agree that Russia will be in a position to theoretically test NATO's Article 5, so to test an attack on one of the NATO countries to see just how NATO will react and whether the other countries will come to help, because, of course, that is what Article 5 means. An attack on one is an attack on all.
Yeah, to wrap it up quickly, there is a dilemma even for me as a father and a family man, and at the same time as a military person who wants to take the threat seriously that is put out there.
Okay, so Zina, what is in that draft law? Can you just walk us through the most important changes and when are they going to happen?
Yes, of course. So what I find most interesting is that it should start on 1st of January 2026, so in a couple of months already. And the idea behind this draft is that young people starting from 2026 will receive a letter or an online letter from the
Verteidigungsministerium,
a questionnaire.
Defense Ministry.
From the Defense Ministry, there will become a letter that they have to fill out a questionnaire online. And this questionnaire will be about, are you willing to join the army? How is your health system and everything like that? It's close to the Swedish model. And people have to fill it out, like men have to, women can. And after receiving that, they will search like who is willing to do the military service mandate on voluntary basis. And also on 1st of January 2028, a musterung, I don't know the English word for musterung, is possible.
Examination.
Fitness test is possible again. Exactly, yes. And as I said, anything of that is on a voluntary basis, so nothing is mandatory by now, except of filling out the questionnaire and coming to the musterung starting in 2028. So those are the things that will be mandatory, but everything else is voluntarily. So the idea behind this is exactly what David was saying, like people should get in touch with the army, people should go to the first steps, and then they might get the idea, oh, of course, Bundeswehr sounds great, I will give it a try. If this is working, everything will be fine. But if this is not working and you don't get enough volunteers, then the law has something within, as I mentioned before, like if there are not too many people and if the situation is getting more dangerous and anything could happen from Russia's side or anyone else, then we can start again and then we can have the full mandatory service again. So, but then the main idea behind this is just getting an idea who is willing and who is capable of joining the army again, because this is something we don't have anymore in Germany. We don't have an overview anymore who is possibly going to the army, like a reservist or something.
And that caveat that you mentioned is probably also important to add, that this is not something where the German defense minister would say, I think this is now a serious situation, so I just need to draft more young people. This would go to Parliament.
Exactly.
Right, and Parliament would then vote. And that is a lesson, of course, from Germany's history. And if you look at the numbers, Michaela, we're looking at some 5,000 people that Boris Pistorius is hoping to get every year for a start. Compare that to the situation.
To begin with, initially. Yes. Okay, because they want to be realistic on how many people they can attract into the service. Some 380,000 soldiers, upwards of that, are needed. It's only about 170,000 at this moment in time. So if you were a company and you were able to freely negotiate contracts, and there are very strict regulations on what you can offer people. There's also not enough equipment for everybody. If like thousands and thousands would want to join every month, there would also be a problem within the German military.
They would need equipment to train people.
It's a capacity
as well.
Problem. There's a huge capacity challenge. But he has committed to tackling it. From anecdotal experience, I know of young people who've joined and then left again after a couple of months because they were simply bored. Mm. Because what he cannot provide is what the Swedish system promises, is that young people will have the best year of their life if they
join. Can he not do that, David? Let's just do a reality check.
What do you mean?
You know, Michaela was saying that it's different to Scandinavia, where they're having the best time of their lives. And here, it is a fact. I'm not joking. It's a fact that the Bundeswehr really does have a problem with people dropping out, initially signing up, but then saying, look, I was so bored, they didn't have equipment for me to train on, etc.
Definitely, that's not a secret. Like the military commissioner we have in the parliament writes in her yearly report that this is a huge issue. And even though we have more applications than long time before, we also have a relatively average but big dropout rate. So this is also an important point the defense minister makes, and also in the coalition contract, to give the military service sense. And sense comes if you have enough personnel to train, if you have enough material, if you have enough cars, enough systems to train what you're supposed to do. This gives fulfillment. And stuff is coming. Like last year, we had almost 125 million drafts that are waved through by the parliament about like ordering tanks, ships and weapons. So the stuff is slowly coming into the military.
So the hardware, yeah?
Exactly, the hardware. But we just need the people, the women and the men to drive the hardware right now.
And what is the situation of the women in the army?
So we have around 13% of women in the military, depending on where you do your service. Like I worked in the mountain infantry. So infantry has usually a lower number of women. But then again, if you look at the medical part of the military, we have over 50%. So it is something the military tries to attract. And you can see it right now on TikTok and social media. There are many military ads with female soldiers trying to attract more women for the military.
But that's the one thing. I mean, the money is certainly there. If anything, this government has received a blank check on defense investment. So it's about upscaling, but it's also about general attitudes. And it's no coincidence that the older people are, the more enthusiastic they are about conscription. It's upward of 80% if you're 50 plus, but between the 18 and 35-year group, which is the most crucial group, it's just 51% who are in favour at the moment. So this really is a challenge. It's a PR challenge. It's also a challenge to create that kind of positive image. And I think it raises a more fundamental question on what is a normal relationship with your military of any country. And it ranges from Israel, I'd say, where it's clear everybody has to serve. There's a necessity to defend the country, leaving aside what's currently going on. But that's a fundamental principle.
And the difference is just in the number of years that women serve. It's only 2 and men serve 3.
Exactly. Then you have the Scandinavian model. You have Britain and the United States. The United States in particular, where at any airport, if you want to check in, they call up veterans first. So people who've served have a different status in society. Germany's just seen a second Veterans Day. So it's only something
that's official one, actually.
The first clear, yeah. But, yeah, you know, look, it doesn't matter. It was instituted only
it
last
year. It was
a year,
Veterans Day, yeah.
80 years after the end of the Second World War. So the German military was seen through that prism of a post-Nazi society for the past 8 decades. And the challenge now is to meet the demands and to also make this a path people feel good about. And let's not forget, the last elections, yes, was fought here in Germany on the economy and defence. The one before that was almost single. Climate change was a huge issue then. So all of a sudden, defence has become the focus. And this is very early days. And there's just a very acute need. And everything needs to be done in lightning speed right now, including changing attitudes. And that does not happen overnight.
Yeah, and you do have groups that are fundamentally opposed to that idea of spending all of that money on defence and on military hardware when we do also have a big lack of investment in other areas like education, like roads, you know. So this is a discussion that will continue. I just want to throw one last question to David, because Michaela mentioned the veterans. We've talked about the numbers of people that in the case of crisis would be needed to be mobilized straight away. And famously, when the conscription was paused here in Germany in 2011, all the institutions that had the records on people who had served, who had been conscripts in Germany, they were abolished. So gone was the data. Can you explain that? I mean, this is something I think when you look at that now, coming from today's perspective, they gave up the addresses, the phone numbers of people who knew how to drive tanks, right?
Exactly. Such an important topic you made, and you're almost answering it yourself already. Like, they did a whole good job in like building down or dismantling the whole conscription and reservist thinking institution pool. So they did a whole job. So because, as we started the episode with, back in those days, it was like the end of history. Germany surrounded by our allies. Like, who's going to attack us? And we talked about how expensive conscription is. Like, they're guessing right now a double-digit billion billion number only to reintroduce conscription again. So it cost a lot of money and they did a whole deal. And that's why also, as mentioned, the defense minister says we have to start as soon as possible to get the legislation through so we can start assessing who are the people in our country, who is there able, because right now we're dependent on reservists in a case of defense or in a state of defense to tell us I'm able to drive this tank or I'm able to fly this airplane, because we don't know it anymore.
But have they started collecting those records?
So what I hear from reservists that are trying to work and do service in the military to upgrade or refresh their knowledge, they write me in my messages, can you help me push this process because it's taking so much time, nobody is entering me. The pity is the German military, from what I see, doesn't even have enough persons to get more persons into the military. So it's just a... mice milking is the German word. Like it's desperate. Like it's really a pity.
Yeah. So it's a long way to go still, and this is of course not our last episode. Like you said, Michaela, on this very discussion, the draft law will probably enter the parliamentary process at the end of August. So we'll keep everybody up to date on that issue. If you've got specific experience that you would like to share with us, if you've got a specific question that we didn't address in this episode, do reach out to us. We're on YouTube, where you can watch us, also on Spotify, all your major podcast platforms. We're here for you every week and we'd love to hear from you. Also, there's a great DW Berlin Briefing newsletter that you can sign up to and get more stories also on the German Armed Forces. But for now, for today, thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, David, over there on the line. Thank you, Zina and Michaela. And till next time.